right? You probably pick your nose when you're by yourself.
I just did. I just kind of rubbed my nose a little bit.
Yeah. But like, I'm in a group. If you're in a group, like, you're probably not going to do that unless you're a toddler, like one of our kids, you know, like there are certain things we just wouldn't do when we're around other people that we would do when we're by ourselves.
Ahoy, hoy! Welcome to Head Games, the science and psychology of sports. I'm Dr. Barrett Levine, joined as always by Dr. Ben Rosenberg. Ben, how are you?
Dude, it is hot in Northern California. Like, it's, I think, 90 here today, and I feel so spoiled saying this, but it feels super, like, grimy and hot, which, again, super spoiled. People who live in other places are like, you know, screw off. Like, it's been 112 here for the last month. Mm-hmm. Here it feels hot.
Yeah.
So it's hot. How are you, man?
107 in LA. And Toronto's always giving their temperatures in Celsius, so I have no idea.
How do you know how to do that conversion? Have you figured that out over the years?
Times 1.8 plus 32, but I'm just too lazy to do that.
Good luck. Why can't it be easier?
You just multiply by 2 and then add 32.
Yeah. All right.
I think it's like high 80s, so it's all good.
Pleasant. Yep. You're back from the outback or wherever you were.
Yep, I'm not in the cabin anymore. I'm back in near the city in Toronto, but I'm still in Canada. And I think because I'm still in Canada, it's only appropriate that we should probably talk some hockey today.
Yay.
But we're going to get into, and this is I'll talk about this later. This is a much larger topic for both of us about team chemistry. But today's episode is going to focus a little bit on team chemistry. We're going to talk about some NHL hockey. We'll talk a little bit of baseball. But first, let's talk news and let's do a little bit of recap. We are not a prediction show. This is not a show Indeed. About making predictions because it's that's a bad business to be in.
Bad business. Very bad.
But, very bad. I want to cover two predictions that we talked about because they're coming up in the news. So first of all, there's a reporter for ESPN, ESPN multimedia reporter, Alden Gonzalez, said that he gave this stat via Twitter a couple days ago and said, the first 18 days of the 2020 baseball season, there are 56 pitchers on the IL with non-COVID related symptoms. And as a comparison, in 2019, after the first 18 days, there was only 24 pitchers on the IL.
Wow.
And in 2018, there was only 18 pitchers. I don't want to take laps in general. I also don't want to take laps about injuries, but you and I talked about this a few episodes ago. We were worried about the bubble in particular, though. And I think this was before baseball had said we're not bubbling.
Yeah.
But we were worried that the conditions of the bubble would create more injuries because you can't separate yourself from work and play.
Overuse.
Baseball's not in a bubble, but we are seeing more injuries. Is this because of they're still sort of quarantining and guys are just bored? Is this sort of the stop and the start of the season? Yeah. What do you think is going on?
My guess would be the start and the stop. I mean, having been a very amateur pitcher for many years, like ramping up kind of like you're getting ready to play and then having that having to just completely shut it down, and who knows what guys were doing during that off time. And then to come back even more full bore than before. What is interesting, and look, we're biased, we're Giants fans, we admit that. Giants have had way fewer injuries than other teams. And they have been super, super, super careful with how they've used their pitchers so far, particularly their starters. I think they had their first quality start like 2 days ago. It was more than 2 days ago, but it was, I think, last weekend. Gossman had a quality start, but it was the first one, right? And that indicates partially that they've had shitty pitching, but also partially that guys haven't been going deep in games, and they've intentionally been doing that. And I mean, you can see why. What do you think it is?
I agree. I think it's, I mean, the Giants are the exception only because I think they've sort of forced themselves to be gadgety anyway. I think they would have been that way in a full 162 anyway, but I think it's the stop and the start. I think there's a lot of like rhythm issues. You know, guys got to get, you know, warmed up to a certain level. And like, you know, the summer training camp or whatever was not that long. So if you stopped and then started again, it's just probably not a good idea.
Well, and here's the thing too. I think you psychologically, these guys get on the mound and no matter how hard you try to sort of rein it in, mm-hmm. you can't do it, right? Like, you're out there. It's a real game now. It counts. You're going for it. And so even if your body's not quite there, I think these guys are trying to force their bodies to get there. And that's where you're seeing some of these disconnects happening.
Also true. Yeah, good point. In the spirit of predictions, I think it's also fair that we look back on some other ones, and given the topic with COVID as well, with baseball, I made a prediction that the Angels would win the AL West because they were taking COVID the most seriously. And yeah. Maybe COVID isn't necessarily the reason why some teams will win or some teams will. I mean, we'll see how the Marlins do this year. We'll see how the Cardinals do this year. We'll see how these teams that really have been hit with COVID do. But my prediction was that they would do well because they were taking COVID seriously. Right. After about 20 games, they're in fourth place in the AL West. So with about a third of the season done, it's not looking pretty.
Well, the A's are killing people, running away, right?
Yeah.
And Astros have been not great either.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into it. Let's start with, I think, a good introduction to all of this. And I'd love your take on this because you've got the academic prowess here to really lend some color to this. But I think there's something to be said when we talk about, you know, topics on this show at an individual versus a group level. And there's some nuances between those two. So there's differences when we talk about the patterns of human behavior at an individual level versus the patterns of behavior within a group. And I think the best way to think about that is, like, for any one person, how different are you when you're alone versus when you're in a group? When you're alone, you're behaving, you're acting, you're thinking very differently than when you are with a group. And because of that, there's sort of different levels of psychology, or there's different, like, dynamics at play, I think is the best way to sort of describe it. And it's an important, I think, precursor for today's episode about team chemistry, and hence talking about this team level stuff. But I think it's an important point to make because we don't want to confuse the two. We don't want to confound these ideas about being an individual versus a group. And I think you've got a take on this. What about the situation, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is really at the root of a lot of social psychology, which is the idea, it's called power of the situation, right? The idea that, like, people aren't the same from situation to situation. As you said, when we're alone, we're different from when we're with our families, we're different from with our buddies watching the game or at a bar. Someday we'll be able to go to bars again. We're different in different people in different situations, or better said, different parts of our personalities, different parts of who we are shine through. We make them more prominent in different situations. And that, I think, it will be highlighted when we talk about team chemistry, because there's two aspects, right? Like, there's me in isolation. Am I a good teammate when I'm left to my own devices? But there's also this broader look at what I'm doing when I'm surrounded by my teammates, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm in that kind of system, and any team is a system. Guys are kind of jostling in isolation, but they better when they're jostling together. And then there's what's happening at a broader, kind of more group level. How are guys working together in that dynamic, kind of systematic way? And mm-hmm. it's just important to distinguish those two things. And I think the logic or the it's easy to see how this plays out. Like, you might pick your nose if you're by yourself, right? You probably pick your nose when you're by yourself.
I just did. I just kind of rubbed my nose a little bit.
Yeah. But, like, if you're in a group, like, you're probably not going to do that unless you're a toddler, like one of our kids, you know? Like, there are certain things we just wouldn't do when we're around other people that we would do when we're by ourselves. And so that really shows you how the situation can play a role in our behavior.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And I don't want to say that team chemistry is the only one of these, you know, aspects or dynamics of being in a group. There's a lot. There's a whole field of this, right?
Yeah.
And I think when we talk about individual versus group, we're really at a very, very high level of all of this. But it's nonetheless a good precursor for team chemistry. Team chemistry is obviously very near and dear to me because it was an area of study for me, and I spent a lot of years in the literature and experimenting with it. So I could talk it ad nauseum about it. And I think that both you and I can do maybe a longer episode on it.
But definitely.
I think just as a quick brief, so we can get into some topics. Recently in the news, I said we're going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk about hockey. I want to touch on it just briefly. And you know, when we say team chemistry, I think most people know what it is. Like my mom knows what team chemistry is. Yeah. It's just sort of like that phrase that it's sort of a catch-all.
Yeah.
And it's been, it's used, I think, in ways like last season, people were throwing it around when talking about the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns had great players on offense. They had Odell Beckham Jr. They had Chubb. They had Jarvis Landry. They had a budding quarterback.
Baker.
And they didn't perform up to the standards that people thought they would. And they said, oh, it's chemistry, because they used that phrase to talk about the mesh or the gel between players. Or people will use it when teammates are fighting, when there's like some like instability. Or people will use the phrase when, you know, it's just sort of like an intangible, like, how did this team, you know, the Giants every year were predicted to be really crappy, but then like they did really well. So people were like, oh, team chemistry, that's got to be the answer.
Yeah.
So to sort of cap it all off, it is a thing. Team chemistry definitely is a thing. We don't call it team chemistry within the realm of psychology. There's a lot of different people who are working on it. They call it different things, but to group it all as team chemistry, the answer is yes, it is absolutely a thing. It can absolutely be measured, and it can absolutely be manipulated. And I think most importantly, and I think really the holy grail of it all, is that it is related to a team's performance. And there's a whole lot more work to be done, and we can talk more about that. But it is definitely a thing. We don't call it team chemistry. And as I said, there's different ways of studying it, and there's different names for it. And when I was studying it, what I was coming across was this topic called team cohesion, which is basically a team working together in pursuit of a common goal. That's basically it. It's how well the team meshes and jives together to, you know, win a championship, something like that. That's basically it. And there's some, you know, research done on it, and there was ideas out there about, well, how do we increase it? Okay. If team cohesion is a thing and it's related to performance, well, then how do we increase team cohesion? And there's a number of things that are thrown out there. Number one was goal setting. That's a big one that I've seen. Like if a team can set a goal, it makes sense. If they're in pursuit of a common goal, that usually leads to more cohesion. There's other stuff too. You know, leadership plays a role. There's all these other little things that I think a team can get into, and we can talk about it later. One of those things, and I think it's important for the news, is self-sacrifice. And there's not a lot of literature on it, but it does kind of make sense, because like, how many times, and kind of put yourself in this situation. If you're on a team where a guy is really gritting it out, he's playing on a bum leg, a bum shoulder, a bum what have you, and he's gritting it out, especially in the playoffs, doesn't that make you feel, I mean, doesn't that make you feel great? Like, that really gets you going.
Or think of even a slightly, I guess, less serious example, a guy taking a charge in a basketball game, right? Like that's self-sacrifice, putting yourself in the way, especially like a guard taking a charge with a big dude barreling downhill at him. Like that's Steph Curry stepping in front of LeBron, right? Like you're talking 6'3", what, 170, 180, and 6'9", freaking 270. Like just stepping in front of him, covering their nuts, and just getting plowed over. But like that's self-sacrifice. And you can see the reaction, I think most importantly, you can see the reaction of the teammates. When a guy takes a charge, people react in the same way as if like somebody just threw down a sick dunk, or like Dame just hit a fucking half-court three like he did yesterday. Like people get stoked about this kind of sacrifice.
Yeah. Fans love it. I mean, as I think about it, I think even in a – you know, you're playing in a rec league and somebody does that, or, you know, you're playing for your fraternity or with your buddies and whatever it is, like it really gets you going. And I think that while there's more work to be done on it, certainly to know if it does contribute to that, I think it really is interesting for the news that's been occurring recently.
Yeah.
So I'll start with,
I want to note, so one thing before you launch into the, into the news, I want to note what we call, what we're talking about right now in psychology research, when something doesn't have a ton of research backing behind it yet, but it makes a lot of sense, we call it face validity. So what we're saying is that this idea of self-sacrifice being a part of chemistry, being a part of cohesion, has a shitload of face validity. Needs more empirical, systematic research, but on the face of it, it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's very much anecdotal, and I think it's smart to recognize that. But you know, there is observation. I think that's fair. I think there is some, you know, some personal accounts of it. So that's how most research starts, right? It kind of starts with those ideas and those hypotheses. Yep. So more work to be done, but let's get into the news. I'm going to start with baseball, and then we'll head over to hockey. there's a story that's coming out of the Cleveland Indians that they were playing in Chicago, and after a game, I think it was Zach Plesac won his first game of the season. He's a pitcher for the Indians.
Young pitcher.
And he went out with some friends in Chicago that night, and he violated these team rules. You know, they're trying to be safe about COVID, and they're saying, like, look, we don't want to go out. We don't want to do this. We don't want to contract COVID because look what happened with the Marlins and look what happened with the Cardinals. And what later came out was that not only did Zach Plesac go out, but the other pitcher, Mike Clevinger, also went out. He did not tell his team that he went out that night, and he flew back with the Indians to Cleveland and possibly could have exposed them to COVID.
Whole team and the coaches.
And then I think he was supposed to make a start maybe when he landed. And what happened was I guess they found out he was scratched, obviously, because he went out and he might have COVID. And the team's taking it seriously. Good on them.
Good for them, yeah.
And another starting pitcher, Adam Plutko, had to, I guess, basically just come in the emergency and pitch for Clevinger.
Yeah.
And he was not happy about it. And he was pissed. He said, those guys really let us – I'm paraphrasing. He said, those guys let us down. They lied. He called out Clevinger for lying. There's been some backlash in the other direction. So both Plesac and Clevinger apologized to the team. And you said that one of them on Instagram said
– Yeah, Plesac posted
a violation or something. Explain that.
Yeah, Plesac posted like a six-minute like mea culpa kind of on Instagram yesterday that I came across. Basically, he was like sort of saying he was sorry, but he was also – and this I think you'll touch on, he was also kind of still justifying what he did and like saying it wasn't that wrong basically to go out because the CDC says, oh, you can get with groups of 10 or less. And he was like, well, we were never with more than 8 people or some bullshit like that. So he wasn't, I mean, the tone of it, we talked about apologizing. The tone of it wasn't exactly hitting those markers of a good apology, if you ask me.
Yeah. That's right. It definitely in terms of those, what was it? Five topics.
Five keys. I don't think it was hitting them. Yeah.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah. It's not good. So we talk about what makes for good, you know, team cohesion, and we mentioned self-sacrifice. This is the opposite.
Yeah.
is not what you want to be doing, because I think, and I'm going to put myself into Mike Clevinger's head. He's a great pitcher. He could be top. Yeah. I think he could be a top 10 pitcher in baseball right now. He wants to make his start. Yeah. That's the opposite. That's being incredibly selfish. It would be self-sacrificing to say, I went out and I'm sorry, and this is important for my team to win and for me not to expose other players to COVID. And, you know, I should do what's right. So if I'm a Cleveland Indians fan, I'm a little bit worried about this because of the dynamics. And Plutko made this statement and hinted to what was going on in the clubhouse, and they lost that game. Yeah. He pitched well, actually, in the pinch. I think he pitched well, but you know, the team lost, and that's not good to hear. If you're looking beneath the surface and you're trying to say what's going on with the Indians, and you want to read into the chemistry, or in this case, we're talking about team cohesion, no bueno. And you know, it's a third of the season is done. Again, there's two thirds of the season left to be played.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more baseball. They're probably favorite along with the Twins. I think it's going to be one of them to come out of the Central. And this year it's the top two teams.
Right.
The Indians right now are 10-9. It's not it's not really a competitive division. The Twins are 12-7.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good. You know, this isn't great.
They're right
this
there.
Great heading into the playoffs as well. That's
even more important than that they have good cohesion, right? Because I think that's where you see the growth. Cohesion isn't going to help a team that's 5-12 at this point suddenly win their division, right? But it could help a team that's kind of middling, like the Indians are, get over the edge. And just as well, it could push them the opposite direction. So for you, Mr. Dr. Cohesion, what can they do? Like, how can they repair this, basically? And don't give me the, you know, super long renewed whole ep on this, but give me the kind of quick and dirty, like, what can they do to repair this?
You know, I think apologizing is the first step.
But
it's, I don't know, off the top of my head, I think it's tough. It can be seen, you can use this as a point of I'm thinking of like when Rodman went to, was it when he went Vegas? To Vegas and then,
yeah, dude,
he's, you know, he quote unquote apologized in his own way to Jordan.
Right.
And it almost kind of left them in a better place, yeah, because he had, you know, violated the team rules and or whatever, right, just blew the team off. So like, you know, if people can see Plesac and Clevenger rebound and take it seriously because they feel bad about it, right? If they can double down and yeah, reinvest in what their, you know, what their role is on the team. Roles is another one. Roles is another topic in terms of what might contribute to team cohesion.
Right.
But also, I mean, doubling down on goal setting and saying, you know what, this is important to make the playoffs. This is important. They're still handing out trophies this year. I'm going to come back and I'm not going to go out anymore. You know, I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to double down and I'm going to be a better team. I'm going to be a better player. Maybe something.
It's like interesting that something like this would happen under Tito Francona's watch too. Like, he's such a iconic manager who has a reputation for being like player friendly, but also not afraid to be a hard ass when he needs to be, Hall of Famer probably when he retires. Like, interesting that it would happen on one of his teams also. I think that's somewhat surprising to be honest.
Yeah. I think he's known as sort of a guy who can smooth things over, and he did. He came out and just sort of downplayed it. So
yeah,
he's the right guy for this.
He is. I totally agree. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So look, still in Canada. I'm in the six. So let's talk hockey. And I think it's actually a great foil for this conversation because we're talking about team chemistry. We're talking about this idea of self-sacrifice and people being maybe a little selfish. On the other hand, I think this is going to be a great example of when this can actually help a team out. And I don't want to make another prediction, but I might have to by the end of this.
Oh, you have
first to. And foremost, I want to give a shout out to the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, Claude Julien. So he was rushed to a hospital. I think it was yesterday. He had chest pains and he had a coronary artery stented and he's at home resting. Man. So
scary stuff.
Yeah. Best wishes to him and a speedy recovery. And they've got Canadiens are playing, I think it's the Penguins in the playoffs, and they've got an interim head coach in there, but I want to wish him the best. So I'm in Canada and I'm watching playoff hockey the other night, and I was watching Flames and Stars. And I think, again, I think this is a good example of self-sacrifice. So the Flames had a great series against the Jets. I think it was in the first round and played really tough. And in game one, of the Stars handed out more hits than the Stars did. And the Stars are this bigger sort of like, that's how they play kind of hockey, brute force type of team. And the Stars laid it on them in game two and they were just pounding him. And one of the young players for the Flames, Matt Tkachuk, who's actually the son of Keith Tkachuk.
I was going to ask you that. My hockey knowledge is limited, but I was going to ask you that. So interesting.
Yep. And in fact, Matt grew up in Arizona, which is where Keith played. Played with the Coyotes towards the end of his career, I think. And he got hammered. And I think it was a good sort of metaphor of what happened to the Flames last night. They're this young team, and I think they were out there hitting, you know, earlier, and the Stars took it to him in game two. Matt got a shot to the groin pretty bad, had to leave, comes back, and then gets sandwiched by two. I think it was Jamie Benn and one of the bigger defensemen just got hammered and he was woozy. He's out. He's probably not. Game three is tonight. I really want to watch it. He's out. But they really got, so they were down, it was 4-2 in the third and they were getting hammered all game. I don't think
they came back and tied it up.
It wasn't just Matt Tkachuk. The whole team was getting pounded and they came back to tie it. Talk about being gritty. Talk about some self-sacrifice. They came back to tie it. They lost it in the last 40 seconds.
Wow.
It was a tough game. They had Mangiapane had this sort of like slide into the ice where the puck went in and the goal was called back because they were like, was it kicking? Wasn't it? It was sort of like a judgment call. Had it called back, which is no bueno. And then losing a heartbreaker. And this is going to be tough. I think it's going to be a great series to watch because, you know, you have number one, you've got, okay, let's say the goal called back. You lost this really high energy player in Tkachuk.
Right.
the Stars really beat them around.
Facing
them
all these obstacles The Stars
beat them around when they were handing out the hits in the first series and in the first game of the series. Right. They lose in a heartbreaker. The Stars have momentum. But, you know, it'll be a real test of self-sacrifice if you see Tkachuk on the ice,
yeah.
you know, either tonight or in game four. But really the whole team who just got hammered. And I think it's a good – you know, this is playoff hockey. And you talk about self-sacrifice. What better sport to talk about than hockey?
It happens
not just with the Flames, but like hockey throughout the regular season, but also the playoffs is really just story after story.
You mentioned that. What Joe Thornton a few years ago played with a torn ACL.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's, I mean, and that made me think of Philip Rivers, now quarterback of the Colts, right? Isn't that where he went?
Yep.
Bizarre.
Yep.
Anyways, Philip Rivers, he of 60 million kids, played with a torn ACL in the playoffs, I think maybe 10 or 12 years ago as well. I mean, these are feats of just like immense self-sacrifice, as you said. So my question for you then is, when a team faces all these kinds of barriers or difficult times, right? They lose one of their most energetic guys after he's like really out there getting it. They almost win the game, get a goal called back. Other teams seem to have momentum. How does having a sense of working towards a goal together help a team overcome that kind of thing?
I sort of prime myself, I think, earlier by talking about roles. And I think roles in this case is big, because if you lose Tkachuk, who's this electric player, he's got some nastiness to his game.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's going to step in and be that guy? They've had guys who have played well in this series, but it is a role that someone's going to need to play. I think throughout, and it's not just the Flames who really got beat up this game, but like throughout hockey, it's everyone's kind of gritty, right? Everyone's playing on injuries. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily the rallying cry, because that also doesn't distinguish your team from other teams. It doesn't make you unique and sort of add to this like excitement of who the Flames are, who any team really is. But I think it's roles. I think if someone can step up and sort of be that electric player and like fill in, you know, next man up kind of mentality, then it's going to be exciting. And they're a young team. And, you know, young teams, I think, can be all over the place. They were leaky, though. You know, they were immature last game. I think they got pushed around, and like there was leaky goaltending. Talbot let in an easy one. There was a guy took a shot. What was his name? Haskinen took this shot from the boards that like I think 99% of the time is saved, and just leaked in. It was just like, ugh, the defense was
tightening up.
Yeah, the defense was leaky, and it was kind of a game that sort of rocked them, because they were grooving, I think, before this game. So can they be, and they have some older players, can they be that mature team, and you know, can someone step up and take that role? Yeah. That'll be exciting to watch. I think it'll be fun. I think that's going to speak a lot to their cohesion, you know, based on what we're talking about in terms of will guys sacrifice, will guys step up in terms of roles, all that stuff. I think it's going to be great to watch.
Well, I mean, if you think about how we defined cohesion at the beginning, right, it's working together in pursuit of a goal. And I think inevitably there are barriers, there are things, roadblocks that get in the way as we're trying to approach a goal, especially for a team sport in the playoffs. And that's such a testament to a team's ability to hang together in the face of that kind of adversity. So in a way, I do think that thread ties together both of these stories, right? Even though Indians are showing no self-sacrifice and the Flames are showing immense self-sacrifice, you have this kind of common narrative that they're both hopefully going to use their cohesion, if the Indians can draw on it, if the Flames can draw on it, to battle through some of this adversity that they're both facing.
Name a team that has won a championship that hasn't had to deal with adversity. Has talked about team chemistry as a narrative, you know, all the time. Guys are interviewed and they talk about the players.
Yeah.
They talk about their teammates. They talk about what a great group of guys these are. I mean, like that's what it takes. That's exactly what it takes to win a championship. And at the end of every season, you know, everyone's scratching their heads and they're saying like, ugh, this team chemistry thing, it's just sort of this intangible. We'll get into this more. And I think it's a great
Yeah.
It's a great topic. It's certainly a lot of fun. There still is a lot of mystery, but I think there's a lot of great work that's going on.
I mean, I mentioned face validity earlier, and I think team chemistry in the context of professional sports is one of those things that has great face validity. Everybody knows team chemistry matters.
Bingo.
They can see it, but it's whether they actually believe in measuring it, believe in manipulating it, believe in trying to build it and use it to kind of help achieve the common goal. Everybody sees it, but can we get to that next step?
Yeah. You know what they can see more readily though, is they can see Mike Trout had a home run, or they can see,
exactly.
they can see Haskinen scoring from the boards.
Exactly.
Performance can be seen a hell of a lot easier.
Right.
In chemistry, you can kind of see. You can see guys hanging out, or you can see guys throwing snowballs at each other.
Yeah.
You can see guys going to dinner. You can see guys high-fiving or hugging. But it's still kind of fluffy, right?
Yep.
And like you and I as psychologists get overlooked because people are like, does this matter? Like, we really just care about performance.
Yeah.
The answer is fuck yes, it matters.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about it in a later episode.
Well, it's the interesting kind of underbelly of the analytics revolution, right? Everybody wants to measure everything, but they only want to measure the shit that you can observe.
Yep.
That you can see with your naked eyes, right? And we want to quantify everything. We want to come up with these complex metrics, which is awesome, by the way. We're all for it. Mm-hmm. But it's the idea that there's other stuff that we can't necessarily see, as you're saying, we can't necessarily observe, that might also matter. And I mean, this, as you can tell, is something that's, you know, important to both of us. And we'll delve into more, as you said, but a really important point.
Yep. No, it is important. There's a lot more beneath the surface of those high fives and those hugs and all that stuff that, there's a lot more than, like, I think performance, where it's like performance is mostly performance and there's not a whole lot. Maybe a guy makes a change in the way he shoots the basketball or something like that. Like
goes to driveline and he comes back throwing 103 or whatever.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Like there's team chemistry is that iceberg. It's really got that iceberg effect. You only see a little bit, whereas there's a lot beneath the surface. Please rate and subscribe if you can, where applicable, and download the show. It helps us in any capacity, whatever medium you're listening or you're watching. You can find us on Twitter at HeadGamePsych. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Brett Levine, and you can find that guy on Twitter at BD Rosenberg, PhD. Thank you, Joshy Boy, Josh Baca, for editing and producing the
show. Joshy Boy!
And thanks for tuning in.